6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Light Force, joined virtually by my podcast bestie, Anna Forsyth at E4603. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, unusually for the podcast, we are happy to report that we have hung out in person.
Mm-hmm.
We both still exist. We're not just voices or faces on the end of a computer screen, but we got to hang out in person.
There's picture proof.
There's picture proof. If you don't follow us on social media, head to the C4 podcast on Twitter, because why the heck don't you?
Mm-hmm.
First of all.
Well, in fairness, you didn't follow me on Instagram until this weekend.
I know.
But I didn't follow you either, so.
This is how little I use Instagram. Like, I'm on it a lot, but I literally had to delete it because I was on Reels too much. But in terms of posting and actually engaging, yeah, I don't really do Instagram.
I did a little Instagram creeping after you followed me and I followed you. You have a fair number of pictures that you've shared on Instagram that I've not seen show up in something like Facebook or Twitter. And like, for instance, your trips, there's records of you going places that I have never seen before.
I know. I do tell you usually when I go places.
Well, I know you're going, but heaven forbid there's proof that suggests you're actually there.
Okay. I mean, quick sidebar, my personality on Instagram is very different, and by that I mean fake.
Mm.
My mom always says, oh, you're so much like nicer on Instagram. I'm like, yeah, that's not real, though. The real me is Twitter. That's mean and, like, scathing and kind of caustic and a bit of a perv. Like, that's the real me.
But on Instagram,
it's like, total princess. Sunshine, rainbows, polite, everything's fun.
Gotcha. Okay, I didn't creep that much to notice. I just saw, wait a minute.
But just so you know, you're not missing out on something that's definitely not, like, some insight into the real me.
Everything that I have ever shared on Instagram has been published to Facebook, and I have an If This Then and That applet set up to then push an Instagram picture out to Twitter, which I am surprised still works, considering the way Twitter is these days.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's wild. But yeah, I think Twitter for me is just, it's my way to engage with the world, but the way, like, I engage with the world is sports most of the time, so that's why I stay on Twitter most of the time.
Hmm. What's your threat's personality going to be like then? Have you figured that out?
No. That'll come later when I actually can be bothered. I've downloaded the app, so there's a start. Awesome.
Step forward. I mean, considering the permissions of the app require to know everything about you, including, you know, how long you're sitting on the toilet, it seems.
Oh, I'm sure they know that already.
Well, I would presume they do, but they're like straight up. I mean, there should be an icon of someone sitting like with their phone in their hands on a toilet, like, you know, saying we're grabbing this information. Anyhow, speaking of sitting on the toilet, that
Can't
was the Vancouver Canucks and free agency, according to some. Obviously, the Canucks were in a tough spot because while they had freed up some space with the departure of Oliver Ekman-Larsson, the newest Florida Panther, that's where he went, right? The Canucks retirement team, I think. Was it Florida that signed him?
That is the Canucks retirement team. I'll be honest, I didn't even notice. Sorry, OEL.
Anyhow, the Canucks did put that money to use and had themselves a short period of time as to which they're in the white. And that's what? They're back in the red again, which means the Vancouver Canucks still need to figure out ways to free up some cash and as well get their roster set up. I mean, the roster is perfect at 23 out of 23, but obviously there are some holes still. So obviously talk a little bit about that. Heaven forbid the Vancouver Canucks and social media not go a couple of weeks between episodes without having some form of controversy. We'll talk about that. Outside of the NHL, the women's game has seen a seismic shift. I don't think that's an understatement, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as well as a few other things. But why don't we dive into Rewind? So the Vancouver Canucks did make a splash into free agent frenzy. I mean, let's be honest. They were going to dive into free agent frenzy like every other team out there happens to do. But as far as what they decided to go and get themselves, there's an argument to suggest that not all are happy. Is that a fair statement?
I mean, sure, but like, yeah, like, that's always going to be the case with the Canucks. As far as, like, we can summarize the Canucks activities. They signed three players immediately, big ticket signings.
Susie, Ian Cole.
And Teddy Bluger.
Thank you.
Stanley Cup champion, Teddy Bluger. And we now have a player called Teddy, which is just adorable. A couple of smaller fish, Matt Irwin and Zach Sorchenko. I think that's how you say his name. Don't quote me on that, because can't say I followed his career super closely. But yeah, like, Carson Soucy, 3x3.25. Ian Cole, 1 year at $3 million. And then Teddy Bluger, 1 year at 1.9.
Yeah.
Like, if we're just taking it paper, like, am I upset at those? No, not really. Like, Carson Soucy, is he a bit of a risk? Sure. But, like, it's not a risk that I'm super uncomfortable with, especially with a OEL contract off the books.
Yeah.
I've liked his play with Seattle. Teddy Bluger, Stanley Cup champion, good depth signing. We need
for
that.
Very reasonable money. Like, yeah. You can't get upset at a player signing $2 million when they're a Jag.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'd totally say Teddy's maybe Jag Plus.
Jag Plus. I like that. Yeah. I think that's a good description of Teddy Bluger. Like, I think he's a very useful player, especially at that price. Ian Cole, let's start. Like, 1 year. Okay, fine. Like, that's not a risk. $3 million, is that a bit pricey? Maybe. But not, I don't know if you would have, like, I think that's his price. The age, that worries me. He's 34. Like, and Canucks have some players that are really pushing the age boundary off JT Miller. Like, that's a bit old for me. But it's all of this is trumped by, I would say, that his worrying past, the accusations in Tampa that we've all just swept under the rug. Like, I don't think you should be ignoring those.
Yeah, so as far as the money, that was like likely what he was getting on the market. Yeah. I mean, if the Vancouver Canucks were of the opinion this is the player they want, $3 million is only 10,000, maybe 100,000 more than he made last season. Like, it's in the grand scheme of things, inflation, cost of everything's going up, including Jags. Or either he's not a Jag, but my hope is he provides play above that. This is something that I have some difficulty with, because we're going to get into a situation around Ian Cole with the Vancouver Canucks that's happened in the past week, where good things, but is there any way to remediate his past? Like, I'm not trying to discount it.
No. To me, I don't know if there's a way around it. Like, just personally as a fan, you just would like to see your club stay away from those sort of players. Like,
no doubt. I'd rather not even be a discussion point.
Right. And obviously, considering the Canucks' recent dealings with Jake Virtanen, like, there was a criminal charge there that was impossible to ignore. And I think they dealt with things as best they could, pretty much, considering what happened. But just because there's not a criminal charge, we're just forgetting about it. Like, Vancouver's a small town, really, when it comes to it. And just, if anything else were to happen, God forbid, like, that's going to come around real quick on them.
Yeah. And if for our listeners, if you're unsure what we're talking about, last season, like we're not talking long time ago, last season, he was accused of sexual abuse. Now he was suspended pending investigation, and both the league and the team allegedly investigated the allegations and determined that they were unfounded, and no charge was ever made against him in the criminal system. The argument that some will make is that, well, look, is he not considered innocent until proven guilty? And I would totally agree with you. He is. In the court of law, he is presumed innocent until proven guilty. And that's fine. But I think we've made this very clear, choose to believe victims. And, you know, maybe there is no truth to the allegations. And I hope that that is the case.
Yeah, obviously, we like.
But it is a serious issue. And I would much rather, as you had said, the Vancouver Canucks had simply found a player commensurate to what maybe Ian Cole can provide, but one that does not come with what Ian Cole brings to the table. But maybe he is. Maybe he is a good dude. Like, and that's sort of why I go back. Like, the tough issue is reconciling. Yeah. At what point?
I mean, that's the thing.
Does this not become an issue?
It's possible. Yeah, as you say, the allegations are false. I would say, like, that just because it didn't make it to a criminal charge does it not necessarily mean that's the case. I know that's not what you're saying. But to put that out there, that in order to get something to a criminal charge, it's not necessarily, oh, like, if it's true, it gets to that stage. There's so many reasons why it might not. You know, not least, it's very intimidating to be a victim in that situation. And law enforcement aren't always trained in the best way to deal with that. There's lots of other reasons that it may not make it that far. And so we really have no idea. And that's why I would just find it, like, yeah, I would say worrying, especially as, like, you know, Canucks were, they were talking about, like, Max Comtois as well. Again, literally no idea if he has anything to do with the Hockey Canada assault investigation, but, like, I'm just not sure why you would take the risk on players like this.
Yeah. And, you know, to also make this abundantly clear, Ian Cole has denied wholeheartedly. By all accounts, he cooperated fully with the investigation, and the allegations that were made against him were made by a now deleted Twitter account. That doesn't negate the possibility that there is truth there, but
those are the facts. And honestly, it's tough. Like, as an Arsenal fan, there's been a player playing for the team the whole season that was also, you know, there were allegations about him via Twitter, and they never came to anything, and because they never got reported, nothing has happened, and that player may be leaving now. But yeah, it definitely makes your relationship as a fan even more complicated with the game, it has to be said.
Yeah. And I mean, this, I think, is very clear to our listeners as well. I mean, these are issues that we do find make it tough. I mean, we look at the Vancouver Canucks, you know, having players who are a player that we know of, but likely players who elected not to take part in last season's Pride Night for reasons. They're wholeheartedly able to have these reasons. They are perfectly fine in maintaining them, but that doesn't necessarily mean we have to agree with them, embrace them, or support them. And that in turn makes it difficult, because when you have a very good player, one that prior to this moment I was a big fan of, I'm now less of a fan. Because to me, that's an issue. That's an important piece for me. It has nothing to do with politics. It has absolutely nothing to do with, you know, some bigger picture. It is truly about, I'd rather having people who are supporting of inclusivity on the team.
And I'm like the same with like Thatcher Demko. I think he would be one of my favorite players if it wasn't for the politics of his wife, which... I mean, you've got to think that in turn reflects on the politics of him. So, like, it does stop you from being wholeheartedly attached to the players in this team.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if we're going to get any further with this. It's just disappointing.
It is. And that's where, you know, if you do turn over stones, you will find things you may not have intended to discover. It is always going to occur. I don't think we're naive to presume that's not going to happen, but there's also those where you're like, I'm not entirely sure what I found under this stone. You can maybe skip that one. You don't have to bring it home with you.
Yeah.
Anyhow, doubt the Vancouver Canucks do a whole lot more in free agency, at least between now and the start of the season, unless they move Tyler Myers, who is continuing to be rumored to be going down to the state of California. There's so much smoke there that it makes absolutely no sense. So as it stands right now, the presumption is that the deal is done once the bonus gets paid, but the Canucks can't pay the bonus early because that's then considered cap circumvention.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone's followed this on Twitter, there's been, you know, very seasoned writers and reporters of the game very confused by this, which I can understand. But at the same time, like, you know, the league, if the league tells you it's cap circumvention, you can't go against the league, and then you, and neither can the people reporting on that fact. Like, if they're not going to pay it early, then they're not, and you've just got to wait and see. So I think you're right. There's been too much noise out there for it to be nothing.
Yeah. But this is an important thing to consider, is that should he be moved, I would have to think the Vancouver Canucks don't bring back a whole lot of contract in return, because they are in a position right now where they have to find a means to reduce their roster by about $4.5 million. Now, you'll then point to me, oh, look, there's Tucker Poolman and Tanner Pearson both on LTIR. There's your money right there. Well, it came out that apparently Tanner Pearson is a lot closer to returning to the team.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that comment from Patrick Alvin did stink of he had no idea. Like, oh yeah, like, I haven't spoken to him recently, but I expect him to be at camp. And you're just thinking, okay, so that means you have no idea. So I think there's been a lot more noise that he's nowhere near ready to come back.
I mean, and then there's, again, no guarantee that Tucker Poolman is on LTR, though he himself is also, you know, dealing with some significant issues. Like, but these are the things, the Vancouver Canucks are banking on their players.
They're banking on both of those at the moment, yeah.
Not coming back. And then Mikheyev, the surgery that he had had was to have him back in time for the start of the season.
Which I think is...
I haven't heard anything otherwise, right?
No, I think that's more likely.
Yeah, so I mean, that's money back into the onto the books. But that four-ish million that the Vancouver Canucks need to free up is a big deal, because as it stands, even if they do, they're just cap compliant. There's no room to grow. They've been signing deals that they needed to get sorted, like Nils Höglander agreed to a 2-year contract. Akira Hirose also got 2 years. So there's, again, modest contracts, but these are things that are going to occur. And as we sort of talked about with the Vancouver Canucks, as we sort of get into the future, you know, there are more deals, namely one for Elias Pettersson that's going to have to be sorted out any year following. Put Colson, RFA, Niels Ullmann, RFA, Jack Studnicka, RFA-ish. I mean, I say ish because I don't know if Jack's in that spot where the Canucks would look to bring him back necessarily. Philip Ronick, who's apparently one of your future blue liners, RFA. And that's not talking about the UFAs they have in the books. So, you know, it's just an interesting time to be a Canucks fan.
For sure. Do we want to go back now and talk about their last remaining piece of the Ian Cole puzzle? Should we just start off here with the voicemail?
Sure, why not?
Hey, Chris and Anna. It's Ian from Saskatoon. We should talk a bit this week about Ian Cole and Luc Bourdon. I know that there's a difference between a number being retired and a number being taken out of circulation. Being out of circulation does not necessarily mean that the number can't be worn again. But I think that the Canucks should have at least spoken to the Bourdon family beforehand. I don't think that the Bourdon family should necessarily get the final say, but the Canucks organization should have contacted them first and said something like, "We have this new player, Ian Cole, who has worn 28 since he was 12 years old. He would like to continue wearing it. Do you have any thoughts on this before we proceed? Is there a way that we can honor Luke's memory and allow Ian Cole to wear this number?" A number being out of circulation to me says that after a period of time, it should be okay to broach the idea of allowing a new player to wear that number. But conversations should still be had with the family beforehand. What do you think? Thanks. Ian.
Thank you, Ian from Saskatoon, friend of the show, longtime listener, and a dedicated voicemail leaver.
Yes, first and foremost, which we appreciate.
It's a good point that he raises about this issue. So, you know, what he's talking about, and if for some reason you haven't sort of followed along, Ian Cole has worn the number 28 his career. That's his number. And if we know anything about NHL players, they're very particular about numbers.
Yes.
Now there are
everything, really.
There are rules in the code as to who gets what number when there's multiple players wanting said number and what have you. And there are obviously situations that do occur where numbers are retired and whatnot. But the number 28 in Vancouver is unique in the sense that it was the number that Luc Bourdon wore prior to his passing years back. And there has been an unwritten rule in Vancouver that no one were to wear it. Now, I don't know if that is the team maintaining it, but there is a good number of vocal fans who suggest that that's the case. So Ian Cole, having heard about this hubbub and the vitriol, elected to respect the, you know, family of Luc Bourdon and elected to change his number from 28 to 82 for this upcoming season. So he's reversed the numbers, which Ewan didn't have to. I mean, there's nothing that says he has to do this too. I don't think the team suggested it. I honestly think this is a player motivated adjustment. But three, the point that Ian raises is that should he have had, you know, and if he does, ultimately, who's part of that conversation? And he talks about how, you know, it should be a collaborative conversation with the family of Luc Bourdon as well. You and I chatted about this past weekend, and I had sort of suggested, is there anyone with the Vancouver Canucks organization that was even around when Luc Bourdon was here? And would they have remembered what his number was? Like, would this have even been a thing if it were not for fans? And I don't want to paint all fans with a brush, because I would say it was a very vocal minority that said it must change, countered by another very vocal minority who said he shouldn't, and a much larger apathetic group in between.
And I would say, like, I'm sure you're right that there's been such heavy turnover. There's lots of stuff that will fall by the wayside, but is it really that hard to think that every time a player picks a number, you run through the players that have died in your organization? Like, especially one that has died whilst he was a Vancouver Canuck, like, in tragic circumstance. Not that I mean, they're all tragic circumstance. Wayne Mackey, obviously. Like, this has already happened. Like, Wayne Mackey's number got taken without consultation with the family. And I just think, even if you're not remembering that moment, which, by the way, happened before I was a fan, but I'm aware of it, just, like, it shouldn't be that hard to remember the players that have died in your organization. It shouldn't be on Ian Cole to know that. Like, they put out video content of the players' numbers that were being pressed onto jerseys. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to just be like, oh, you know, like, what number are you going for? Oh, like, let me just check with someone that that's okay. Like, yeah. To me, it shouldn't be that difficult to remember three players that have died.
Well, but this, therein lay an issue with the organization, is a lot of this history is lost with people as they leave the organization and move on. I'm not so certain that this is the case. I'm not anywhere near connected. So it's just my instinct that's telling me this. But unless that jersey is listed up top, and of which there are 6, 10, 12, 16, 19, 22, and 33, honestly, I don't know if anyone else would know. You know, at the end of the day, I think there needs to be a better understanding, but also what Ian suggests, a process to evaluate. Like, if there are numbers that are not touchable,
yeah,
make that very clear. But if there are numbers that are not untouchable, but avoided for reasons, there needs to be a collaborative process to determine that.
Yeah, Ian is clearly right that there needs to be a process. To me, it shouldn't have come to that, but clearly there does need to be a process because no one's thinking about the most basic things to me. Like, to me, it's just very different from no one picking one. Like, yeah, it doesn't seem like the done thing. No one's worn it since long ago in the sort of reverential kind of way. But if some goalie picks it from 5 years from now, like, I don't care. Like, and Longo's maybe my favorite Canuck. Mm-hmm. It's Kevin Bieksa, but Luongo second. But I don't think that's the same thing as a player dying in tragic circumstance when he's on your team. Like, to me, it's so basic. And to me, it, like, once you make the mistake, don't leave it up to the player to rectify it.
No.
Just say, like, guys, yeah, like, we messed up. Like, we've had a conversation with the player. That's what the statement should have read. Like, we've had a conversation with the player. The player wasn't aware, and we should have known this is what's happening. Yeah. It shouldn't have been a statement from Ian Cole.
Yeah. The number 28, I'm just looking at the players who have worn it over the years. So Luc Bourdon was the last Vancouver Canuck to wear that number. But prior to him, there is a laundry list of players, but names that may ring a bell: Mark Crawford, Colin Campbell.
Wow. The good and great of the game. And I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah. As far as the number 82, Nikolai Goldobin wore that number. But did prior
he,
to him?
I think he had a couple of numbers.
He did.
Wasn't he 88 at one point?
Oh, maybe, yeah. I don't remember, but, like, he wore it, and then now Ian Cole. And I'm using hockeyreference.com for those who are curious where my source is.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of intricacies, don't get me wrong. Like, do I expect all the Canucks staff to know that, you know, Thatcher Demko and Bo Horvat were 35 and 53 for the exact same reason of a teammate that died, one just chose to reverse a number? No, but, like, remember three numbers that aren't on the rafters, I would say. And that's all you need to do.
If you had to wear a number, what would it be?
4.
Number 4. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it just predates hockey. It's, I always picked out number 4. Well, number 10 when I was playing netball or football, just because my two favorite Arsenal players growing up would be Cesc Fabregas and Dennis Bergkamp. But the 10 kind of brings with it too much expectation in football. So, yeah. And I was not that kind of player.
Gotcha. See, I'm number 38.
38? Any reason?
So, growing up playing fast pitch softball, the larger the number, the larger the jersey, essentially. Like, small got one, and then so on and so forth.
No way.
So I've always been a bigger guy. Like, even in my best shape, my shoulders were so broad, I needed to wear a larger jersey. And it just happened to be. I just accepted it. And because there were fewer of me, I was always having choice of numbers. So I just went with 38. It was like, you'd have a team, like there'd be like one, you know, two, three, four, five, and then there's this 38.
So that's very funny to me that the shirt size varied because of the numbers. Like, you'd think it would just be like there's space for two numbers on every single shirt, but
yeah,
I guess not.
Anywho, thanks for dropping us that message, Ian. If you, like Ian, want to take part and hear yourself on the show, I can guarantee you we will play your message. It is not, well, I mean, it's screened to some respect. But if, like, hated podcast enemies, Trust the Process were to call us and advertise their own show, I would play it. Speakpipe.com/C4podcast is where you can. We'll take a short break before we come back. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So what was the most shocking thing to have occurred during free agent frenzy?
Outside of Vancouver?
Yes.
I'm like scrolling these trying to find out like which one stands out to me as like the one I didn't expect the most. There's so many, it's so hard to pick. Like the one that jumped out to me, JT Compher, the fact that like Avs can't find space for that kind of contract. Like I was just like surprised. I'm sure there's like Milan Lucic is back with the Bruins, which is just incredibly funny.
Well, I mean, friend of the show, Jay, wanted him to be here in Vancouver.
Yeah, I almost posted something in the Discord and I just forgot to do it. But maybe I'll just call out here. Just when he was talking about how he's a big fan of Daryl Sutter. And I was like, yeah, we should have known.
Yeah.
That is a red flag. Being a big fan of Daryl Sutter as a coach is a red flag.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, you know, deals are concerned, I think for me, there's nothing shocking about free agent frenzy until players who can like cash in choose not to. What's his name? Took a show me deal with Columbus, I believe. If I was better prepared, I would know the name off the top of my head. But like this type of deal where he could have easily made money with term, but is elected to, I'm going to bridge myself to when the cap goes up significantly and then have far more suitors negotiating for my craft. And I think, you know, we're now starting to see younger players play that game because the cap itself is going to be somewhat depressed for the next couple of years as we come out of the, you know, after effects of the pandemic as it had in the league revenues. But also teams who've had to struggle through this will also find more cap space just generically through the reduction of contracts left on the roster.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out who you mean. I'm sure it'll be someone obvious, but I saw that Damon, you don't mean Devin Severinsen. I mean, he.
No,
because that's a big, big contract.
Yeah.
Or at least I thought so from. Anyway.
Now I had it when I was looking over the rundown, I actually was like, oh, yeah, this is the one I think that has me most surprised. But then...
I mean, a lot of what Columbus has done has surprised me, but... I've got to say, I don't envy anyone getting shipped to Columbus.
Or maybe it was Carolina. I can't... I'll be honest. Okay. I'm at a loss now.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm an old man.
Yeah, I mean, there's some people that I'm just, like, surprised is still in the league, I guess. Like, this isn't a slight on Max Pacioretty, but I feel like he's been in the NHL forever. I'm just like, I'd be donezo if I were you, like, cash out. But, totally not. Dmitry Orlov. Okay, there you go.
Two-year deal.
Yeah, 15 and a half, 2 year. Okay, yeah, I can see that. This is a surprising one.
Yeah. So, like, and that, again, is a shift. Like, in the past, we would have seen a player who was able to go and get term, take it to the bank.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw Troy Stetcher, Canuck legend, Troy from Richmond, go back to Arizona. So, I don't think that's anything too exciting for him, unfortunately. I guess Michael Bunting was kind of surprising. I expected Toronto to find a way to get him to stay. But yeah, Toronto, like everyone, subject to cap issues. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, and that's, I think, also playing into where you have players like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews who are in the space of, I guess, are we retiring?
Yeah.
You know, two players coming off huge salary, but ultimately we're told, yeah, we're going in a different direction now. You're no longer needed. Peace be with you.
Yeah, I did just...
And speaking of, you know, players carrying baggage, those are two players that have...
Oh, yeah.
A full-on cart.
That's for sure. I mean... I'm literally realizing just now, like I realized, you know, half an hour ago that OEL went to Florida. Reading through free agency signings, I'm realizing that Brady Keeper has gone to Montreal. So, I mean, pleased for him to get a fresh start, but sorry to see him go. He was such a great ambassador for Indigenous players and did so much work there that often went unheralded, but like
he also suffered a catastrophic injury
that's so difficult to come back from. So I'm hoping that better times await him in Montreal. But yeah,
I mean another player, Ethan Bear, who was not qualified, still unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, I mean, again, the Vancouver Canucks apparently would be interested in bringing him back, but they're now quote unquote broke. Like,
I mean, they are, yes.
Like there's no room to sign a deal. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a few players that were sort of seemed to be on the move that were quite, you know, I was about to say heralded again. I don't know why that word, I don't think I've ever said that word in my life and now it's just stuck in my head, but you know, touted players that seem to have, you know, not been up to much in their ELC. So like Philip Zadina's just signed a cheap contract in San Jose and it just seems like he and a few other players just really did not live up to their quite considerable hype.
The Canucks, you know, I think if we were to consider a free agency and we're sort of, I guess, going back into to rewind here, but if they did look to do something, am I fair and presuming that the net might be a place they'll look to shore up with Thatcher being their go-to and having a more seasoned goaltender to back him up as opposed to reliance on, you know, Spencer Martin or, you know, Artur Seelos. And again, Seelos is not, I think he's ready, but if you're not going to play him, might he be better to lead Abby? And I don't know if Sochenko is the guy.
No, I think it's the plan that, and I think it's the smart move that Artur Seelos is a starter in Abbotsford and taking the lion's share of starts. And if they need an injury call up in, say, January, sure, bring him up and, like, have him play a game or two. But, yeah, I do think seasoning is what's required with Artis. He loves to build on what he's shown so far. Yeah, the Nets, I think they'd... I do still think that Vancouver are banking on Spencer Martin as a backup.
Yeah.
I think that's the plan. And if they signed a vet, that he would likely be sort of Richard Bachman figure in Abbotsford, and that they'd like to go with a three rotation of goalies again. But that's not to say that they wouldn't want someone like Richard Bachman who could come up and do a job in Vancouver. I don't know why Richard Bachman's just got this.
Well,
he's like the byword for vet, but
no, but he served that role really well. He understood it's that great. He was there to help develop the young kids in the farm team. He was reliable that if he had to come up to the big club in a pinch, you knew you could get some games out of him. So I feel like he is the epitome of what the Vancouver Canucks would be looking for.
100%.
As far as sort of, you know, goaltenders that are out there, like, I mean, whether or not, again, we have no clue if they would be willing to go, you know, down to Abbotsford or would want, but like, you know, Alex Stalock, 35, he played 27 games last season. He was cheap. I mean, this is a player who I think is coming off a season where in a sheltered role could probably do well. I mean, there's others out there, some of which are maybe better placed into going to pasture, but you know, what's Martin Jones doing these days?
Oh God. Could BC boy bring him home?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to suggest Martin goes to pasture. Mike Smith is still out there probably looking for a deal and he'll be, you know, older than me momentarily. I mean, that's not true. I am older than him, but still, could you imagine Mike Smith flopping behind the net in Vancouver? It'd be like
he's
old times.
He's going to break a hit next time jersey. He flops, I swear.
But like I feel that as far as the position, there might be an opportunity to get a player at a very reasonable number. Again, but this is presuming Tyler Myers gets traded and Vancouver Canucks have room.
Yeah, so remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I'm still of the opinion that they want Spencer to work out as a backup.
Yeah. Moving off the NHL, let's talk a little about what's going on in the women's professional hockey world. I was going to say leagues, but it's no longer leagues. It's league. Since we last recorded, the PHF and the PHWA, which I believe was the Professional Hockey Federation and the Professional Hockey Women's Association.
Yeah.
Something like that.
PHWA, yeah.
They have merged. Now, a consolidated women's scene, I think, is good. However, the consolidation and how it occurred has created a seismic shift in such a way that if you truly think in the seismology sense, an earthquake has occurred and there is going to be damage dealt to many of the players who were playing in both leagues. Why? Some had deals signed that they've now been told aren't deals. You know, because as part of the merger, it's like the reset button has been hit. Yeah. There are now, in a consolidation of the two operations, fewer jobs.
Yeah.
Simply put. And I don't feel that serves the women who've been pouring their hearts and souls into this game. And despite everything that has been going against them, pushing it forward will come out well in the short term. I don't know enough about it to know if this will be good in the long term, but the NHL has, you know, sat idly by saying we're not going to do anything until there is consolidation. Right?
Yeah. Like,
so this might be it.
Yeah. So, and I will say, like, we're not going to go in depth here because we don't have the knowledge for it. Broadcast, our friends over there put out a really good episode where they spoke to some media and player agent with a lot of knowledge, so would recommend you listen to that. I will say, like, is a merger a good thing? Like, in theory, of course, like, we're having warring sides that have been constantly in conflict come together. I think that's good. I think it was always going to be messy. Like, one, I think this merger was inevitable. Two, I think it's always going to be messy. There's going to be people that are going to suffer in the fallout from it. Saying that, I don't think anyone expected it to be now.
Mm-hmm.
Least of all the players who were called to a, like, the PHF were called to an emergency meeting, and they were told just lots of people couldn't go, obviously, because it was just like...
Well, it was a Zoom invite. Like, it was urgent, meeting, come see that. Like, there's no details included because of, obviously, the nature of the deal, but still.
Yeah, but it's really tough. Like, there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I think details are still being confirmed as, they are worked out. All PHF players who have deals will be paid a 12th of their salary or $5,000, whichever is greater. So that is guaranteed no matter if you're getting re-signed or not. What's tricky is not only are jobs not guaranteed, because two leagues does not go into one easily. Even if some players decide it's the time for them to retire, and if, like, not everyone wants to be a fully professional hockey player. There's lots of PHF and PHWA players who just like their careers too much, and that's totally fair. So players are going to lose their jobs, but also teams might not exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the harder thing for me as a PHF fan to stomach. Like, Connecticut Whale is just, like, they do not seem like... No, I won't say they might not survive this, but they might not. Like, I think, unless you're Toronto or... I think Toronto is mainly the only guaranteed team to survive this. Maybe Montreal, they have a big following as well, but... Like, teams that are hard to get to, like Minnesota, that has quite a storied history in women's hockey, it doesn't look good for them. Who knows what will happen, but to me, I do think the fact that they don't know what rinks they're going to play in, I know they have till January, they have 6 months to work this out, but the fact that kind of the worlds of two sets of players like came crashing down in one night, and then they say, oh, well, we don't know if we're going to have your team. Like, yeah. To me, I feel like they could have had more worked out before. Like, maybe if they gave it another year. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't say I know enough about either of the two operations, the two leagues. I know you follow the Connecticut Whale. You'd occasionally tell me about, I think it's the Minnesota Whitecap, is it? Is that it? Or Whitecaps? Yes. Yeah, because... Whitecaps out here for soccer. But based on what I know, there are only going to be six teams in the league. That is a reduction, no matter how you look at it. The player salaries and within the collective bargaining agreement are somewhat depressed, but I say somewhat in the sense that it's not like these were big salaries to begin with. But if we look at it sort of from a high level, okay, well, this maybe needed to occur, but down where the players are, you were planning on a job that you no longer have. You don't know if you're going to get one back. You don't know where it would be and what a team. And so long as that continues to remain unknown, like, what do you do? Do you put your life on pause? Like, I can't imagine what these women are having to go through. And I'll make sure to give that episode of the broadcast a listen, because... Again, I can't relate.
Yeah, I think it's just really tough because, a lot of these players are getting help now, like, in terms of visa status, in terms of, protecting their contracts, in terms of you know, like advice and stuff, but I don't think you can avoid the fact that they thought, you know, what they thought about their careers last week is no longer true. And there's a lot of chaos going on. So yeah, it's tough. And I would say just like, this is probably the last thing I'll say on it, but like as a fan, I just don't think you can underestimate the fact that like, yeah, there's players I like, but I'm a fan of the Connecticut Whale. I'm not a fan of random new team, you know, like in cricket, they've just created a new competition a couple of years ago in England and England and Wales. And they created new teams for it. And it's just like, oh, well, I'm not a fan of that team. I'm a fan of Middlesex. I'm not a fan of the London Spirit. Like, I'm proud to be from London. Don't get me wrong, but I don't, you know, it's just a random team to me. It's really hard for me to conjure up any strength of feeling. Yeah. Like, I'm going to be happy for Taylor Gerrard and Kenny Marchment wherever they go, because surely they've got to get new contracts. They're so talented, but like, unless they end up on the same team, like, it's going to be tricky for me to just keep being a fan with such, like, fervor, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, well, we will learn more as you will learn more over the course of the coming months. And again, this is a story is only just seeing its first few chapters written. I mean, the NHL has suggested they're willing to now entertain collaboration, something as to which they had no plans on doing, because, well, who do we go and talk to? Because that's the important thing, having just one person, not let's make the women's game great. Speaking of making the game great, the investigation into the 2018 Hockey Canada World Junior team is rumored to be fast approaching conclusion. And Frank Saravelli has suggested that when the report drops, the NHL will be suspending current roster players. I, for one, am outright shocked if that is actually true. Because if the NHL is willing to suspend roster players over something that they did as junior players with no association to the league at the time, how bad will this report be?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, whether it's the NHL is prepared to do that or the teams are expecting that to happen, that's a long way from it happens. I mean, I did see a tweet saying, won't we all be shocked when they somehow come out that none of the indicted players, for want of a better word, are currently in the league. Like, if that turns out to be the case, I don't think that'll sit well with me, but I don't know whether anything will. It's a messy situation, however, whatever ends up happening from now, but I can't say, yeah, you'll feel vindicated. Especially, like, if they say, oh, no, actually, none of the NHL players did anything, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make a presumption based on something that's completely unknown, but Frank Saravelli tends to be a very reliable source, especially in matters such as these. And again, you're right. Like, this happened and they get to continue to play, but for the league to react, the league normally ignores this stuff.
Like, case we've in point, literally Kyle seen Beach. It. Yeah, we have seen it firsthand happen only recently.
Oh. Oh,
but
my.
Even then, do like suspensions do anything?
I'm not sure. Overall, absolutely not. Can't go back in time and remedy what's since transpired, but for a league that's adverse to actually reacting at all.
Yeah, it's true. I would say that
step forward.
Yeah. it just feels mad to look back on. And don't get me wrong, this was a horrific thing to happen. But why am I blanking on his name?
Don't worry, I blanked on names earlier.
Yeah, he was an ex-Canuck. He got, who did we get in the Thomas Vanek trade?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Okay. But, you know, he got his contract cancelled, did he not? Like, after the DMs were published, where he was being absolutely horrific. It wasn't in the Thomas Vanek trade, so that's incorrect. But he came from Vegas, and he no longer played with Vancouver when the DMs were published, but he got his contract cancelled. And I think that was over the morality clause, I want to say. Can you see that happening in the future?
Is that what's his name that was playing in Washington when it occurred?
Yeah. He, like,
so
I feel like we need to do a, like, you know, it's like one of those trivia questions where you put in where, like, it's the, like, player's history of teams they played with. And then you have to guess what the player is. But I need to reverse engineer that because play for Vegas, Vancouver. Leipzig, that's it. Brendan Leipzig. I don't know why that I blanked on him, but thank you.
No, I was, as soon as I'm like, oh, I know exactly. I'm like,
everyone knew.
But what threw me off was the Vanek, and I'm like, oh, I don't think he was. But then I don't know. I'm an old man.
I think it was just, his contract was terminated by Washington after, like, don't get me wrong, horrific comments, but like.
Yeah, but then there's a jaded part of me that looks at that and wonders, is the team just trying to get themselves out of a contract?
I mean, possibly. I think it's probably more to do with the enemies he made in the NHL, because a lot of the derogatory remarks
were
about
true
players and their partners.
Yeah.
And I think people didn't trust him anymore. And I don't think that's the same thing as, like, acting. Necessarily think that players and management wouldn't trust players if it emerged that they were involved in this sexual assault. So, yeah, I don't see anything sizable happening, but it's possible things will happen. But we must wait and see.
Yeah. I was thinking it would be an opportune time to transition into our last segment, but I'm wondering if we don't save this for next week, because I kind of feel it sort of belittles the topic we just spoke.
Yes, so. I think we should.
Good call. So look at this, pivoting on the fly, live podcasting at its best.
We are in sync, as always.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm as old as in sync. You grew up listening to them.
God.
C4 Book Club, if you haven't noticed in our Discord, there has been a lively conversation over the current book of the months. That's sort of how the C4 Book Club runs. In front of the show, Ian from Saskatoon, Scott Agote, Anders, yourself have been talking about.
Yeah, I'm going to dive back in because there's some really interesting conversation going on about fighting in hockey. So,
yeah.
If that sounds of interest to you, I'd suggest, you start reading Boy on Ice by John Branch and dive into the conversation. Where can they find that conversation, Chris?
Hey, just head to discord.io/C4podcast, and it is the C4 Book Club channel, which will be at the bottom of the text channels list. You'll find it down there. Joining also gets you into the conversation in Gate 16, where we talk about everything Vancouver Canucks, as well as occasionally an off-topic, everything that's outside of the realm of the Vancouver Canucks, NHL, you name it. Food chatter has been lacking. Nom Nom has been a little quiet. Just saying. Need more food.
We do need more food, and we need someone. I feel like people need to post what they're drinking as well, because Jay's posting his terrible beers, and I need other people to join in and post their better beers.
So I actually thought that I didn't realize that was a beer. When I saw the picture, I presumed like a cider or something like that. I didn't see that it was a extra strong beer.
It doesn't look good.
So what kind of beer is this? Oh, it's a sour. Okay, I see it. This is so like extra strong beer, Imperial Love Buzz. Like I'm seeing all these words, but cherry blossom sour.
Like, I mean, I don't like sours anyway, but beer or food should definitely not be flowers.
I'm not
sorry, that's my line.
Food part. I can see how it's like accentuates.
Nope, tastes like soap.
Eh, to each their own. Do you like cilantro or is that soapy too?
No, I don't mind it.
Okay, because I know there's like a segment of the world that have soapy tasting cilantro, which I did not know until, and someone was trying to describe this to me, and I'm like, how is that even possible? But it's not going to understand that it is very possible.
Yeah, no, I don't mind it. But, like, I feel like there's often too much on a dish, so I often thin it out, but I do like it.
Yeah. We earlier talked about the voicemail that Ian had left. If you, again, want to drop us a voice message or alternatively, even a text message, speakpipe.com/C4podcast allows you to leave us either of the two or both. And we will include it in an upcoming show. It can be a question about something going on with the Canucks, the league. Could be comments about the show. It could be Bowman and Wyatt trying to advertise Trust the Process, which I don't think has actually been publishing episodes lately.
Oh.
So, I mean, they'll be on to their 23rd podcast together at some point in time, if that's the case. And, you know, just to make it very clear, there are more Canucks podcasters out there than Chris Faber, who is a friend of the show, not podcast bestie.
Yeah. No, there's only two podcast besties in this relationship.
That's right. You and me, baby. Any final words of wisdom there, Anna?
Numbers are hard, I guess.
Numbers are hard? Mm-hmm. They are hard. They are hard. I was about to say something else, but then I caught myself because when the words actually went through my head initially, it was okay. But then I did a second pass and they were not okay.
I actually will say something more serious briefly. We mentioned the top that we went to the Whitecaps game together. We went to the Pride game. It was beautiful in all kinds of ways. Save for the result. Yeah. And what was not beautiful, apart from the football, sorry, Whitecaps, was some pretty ignorant conversation that was happening behind us, which kind of ranged from the minimum wage in Canada is too high, to some ignorant comments about such education in schools, about trans people, and then about Mexican people and Hawaiians. And I did have to, you know, I ended up yelling at people, which is not what I wanted to do on a Saturday night when I'm hanging out with my podcast bestie, but I did have to yell at people. So I just say, if you're going to be ignorant, just be quiet and do it in your own house, because I don't have time for it.
I can back her up, like, everything was being said. I can't back up that she went ham, but I trust that she did. I have a hearing issue in environments like this. I didn't even realize it had gone on, but they did leave early. And as I said on social media, Anna Forsyth, she's good people. Idiot behind her, not good people.
No, not good people. So, you know, be better people.
Yeah. Yeah. Be better people. Those are my final words. So on behalf of Anna Forsyth, A4603, myself, Chris Adlai-Force, signing off this C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast episode, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com with We Out.